Welcome, everybody, to A Galaxy Not So Far Away, a Mysterious Galaxy podcast. I'm Gary.
And I'm Becca.
And today we have bookseller Kylie with us.
Hi.
And we have a very special guest. We are interviewing, personally, one of my favorite fantasy authors of recent years. Jen Lyons is here today. Hello, Jen.
Hello. It is a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. We got an advanced copy for Ruin of Kings into the store. God, probably like six months maybe before that book came out. And I think I read it twice before it came out because I just, I like puzzles. I started to say this when we were talking earlier. Like I'm a fan of puzzles and there's so much to like pull apart in that book. I had such a blast. We got it. And one of my coworkers was like, oh, this book has footnotes. And I was like, this book has appendices. This book has family trees that don't actually make that much sense all the time. Like flipping back and forth through the book as I was reading it, like just devoured this. I tell everybody that I love it so much. I'm very excited to talk to you today.
I'm super excited to be here. And that is what you just named is either the reason you love these books or you hate these books.
True. There's an element, I mean, I don't think this is necessarily true. There's an element of work to it, but I think it's because like I look for that work. I like sure. trying to figure out the mystery, right?
Yeah, like you don't have to.
But I like to think that I can figure it out.
I remember Gary when you told me that I think you showed me the footnotes or the tree, the family tree or something. I was like, oh no.
Yes.
Oh no, I have to read them now. And then the rest is history.
Right? the first two came out. We had you, Jen, at the store for, I think, the second book, right?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
For The Name of All Things.
Yes. For some reason, I have the link for the third one up in front of me, and for some reason, book two's name just gone from my head. For Name of All Things. And Kylie and I, when we knew you were coming to the store, had been going back and forth, like, trying to figure out, like, certain people's parentages and, like, how certain characters are connected. And we put together, like, a whole little conspiracy board book, which... Kylie, you still have that, right? You have that.
Yeah, it's in the back of my car. It's awaiting its place of glory in the new back room.
If
we have pictures of that, it needs to go up with the like Instagram advertisement for this episode.
Oh man, I think I do have pictures.
I definitely have pictures, but there's like major spoilers. I guess the second book's been out for a little bit now, so that's fine.
That's true.
The second book has been out for a little bit, so.
So I guess they're not super big spoilers
anymore.
I can make
a little graphic to put at the top of the picture that's a spoiler alert.
Perfect.
Yeah, I can take a new picture, because like I said, I still have it. It's in the back of my car.
but I wanted to talk a little bit about, like just fantasy as a genre in general, and, like, how you got, you know, inspired to, like, because this is, like, not just an ordinary, here's a one-off fantasy book. Like, this is a very elaborate world that you've constructed. What kind of stuff, like, were you reading growing up? Like, what fostered your fascination with fantasy?
Oh, I was reading everything. I mean, I was, you know, I joke in my, like, my bio that I went from A to Z in the library, but that's actually not a joke. I went from A to Z in my library.
Oh, wow.
You know, I literally read everything I could get my hands on. So, I was, you know, it all went into the bucket.
Okay.
And condensed out. So, you know, there's Tolkien in there. There's, David Eddings in there. There's, there's Robert Jordan in there. There's, Ursula K. Le Guin in there. Mm-hmm. There's, I mean, just all of these different, Lloyd Alexander and then my own family and our, backgrounds and all of this, the history and the mythology and the cultures that I grew up with. And it all, this is just kind of it all condensing down. So
sure.
It would be very, very difficult for me to point to any one thing and say, that's the inspiration for this.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I too read, you know, I don't know. I feel like I say I read a lot of fantasy growing up, and I know that I have, I certainly have, working at, you know, a store like Mysterious Galaxy, but part of what I was doing a lot when I was a kid was I would reread stuff. So rather than going to the library and picking up new things, a lot of what I was doing was like going back through fantasy series that I really loved. So, I mean, we talked about our very first episode was about things we read a lot, was rereads that we do all the time. And like, I read Harry Potter every year, I think. And that, right, you know, is a bit of a commitment. So I wasn't picking up like new stuff as often as I could have been. But like Robert Jordan was a series I really got into. The Terry Goodkind filled like at least a semester of my school year. Just these really big immersive worlds that I like fell into. But I think for a lot of people my age, like Harry Potter was such a cultural like signpost.
Right.
Absolutely. Drove a lot of people into that, you know. And then I was, you know, probably just going into middle school when the Lord of the Rings movies happened. And that's when I like discovered Tolkien and like that whole world of like, you know, a sort of deeper mythological like epic.
Right.
Delighted.
Yeah, I kind of come from a generation up from that. Yeah. So, you know, when the Harry Potter books came out, you know, I was a teenager and I started coming out. I was a teenager and, I was, you know, in my late teens, actually, not even like in high school anymore. And you know, a lot of these things that now is just part of the culture that we're in, I grew up thinking we would never see, because I didn't really, none of us understood what was going to happen when the geeks hit Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it really like changed the culture, right? Cause like no one would have expected Game of Thrones to be the biggest thing on TV.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. No, nobody, when I was a kid would have predicted that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I'm a kid of the Krull. You know, that those kinds of Beastmaster. I mean, you know, the fantasy movies that were out when I was a kid were, ooh.
Yeah. Do you, you know, I think it's been interesting because fantasy has kind of leaned into more of a, it has become so much more of a, like a cultural phenomenon. And it's really fun. Like being, especially I think because we work at a bookstore, there's a privilege of like being in the know as new things come out and being able to be like, oh no, you should read this. Like this is the thing. People come into the bookstore all the time and ask about epic fantasy, and between the success of the Netflix Witcher show and us selling the Witcher, like unable to keep the Witcher books on the shelf. I put your hands in or your book in people's hands all the time, just all the time.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to hand sell.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Very appreciative of that.
Absolutely.
I was familiar with the Witcher stuff from video games, obviously. I think that's how a lot of people
come
in contact with the Witcher franchise stuff. Occasionally people hit books first, but I think it's most people, it's the video games first. And I was prepared to not like the TV show. I was pretty prepared. I will admit this.
Mm-hmm.
But I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. I would say the same, you know, for me, I mean, Carly's been the one who's been like devouring all the books. I've only read the first two so far. Actually, the first three. I just finished Blood of Elves recently. I think I finished Blood of Elves right before the quarantine happened.
Okay, yeah.
But I haven't started the next one yet. But I played Witcher 3 years ago and just loved this world. And it's been really interesting watching like the show happen. And just starting with the games is interesting because they take place after the books. And it's an interesting way to like dip your toe into that universe, then go back and be like, no, this is all the setting of the stage for like what I do know.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's super interesting because I have not played the games. I have the third game. I haven't started it yet, but I knew that the show was coming out. So I started reading the books and then kind of did those concurrently. And then, so I didn't really know anything about it going into it, and I loved them. I've read all except the Season of Storms, the midquel or whatever.
Yeah.
But they are, I thought they were excellent. They did get pretty dark by the end of it. Like you hit Time of Contempt, and then it's just like downhill from there.
There's a war going on.
They're pretty brutal. They're pretty brutal. But I really, really enjoyed them. And then I thought the TV show, like, I really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job. I'm excited to see what they end up doing with the next season, since the first one relied so much on the short story collections.
Yeah, I keep wondering if they're gonna like fill in. Because Blood of Elves kind of picks up after Ciri's been with Geralt for a little bit.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're going to kind of, like, continue with their time jump sort of thing. And, like, do Blood of Elves stuff and then show, like,
Ciri
and Geralt going to Kaer Morhen. Or if they're going to kind of make it a little more linear at that point.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was watching those, with great interest because of course, there's a lot of nonlinear storytelling that goes on and, I don't know why I would be interested. would be interested in how people, receive that idea of nonlinear storytelling. But, for the most part, I think everyone was fine with it. And I was very reassured.
Yeah. You know, like, my mom watched The Witcher TV show, which is not a thing that I would have expected her to do, you know? It's fantasy of that nature was not something that, like, other members of my family were really even interested in until relatively recently. My sister watched Game of Thrones with me, and I was really surprised that she was even interested because it was something that was just so distinctly, like, my niche when I was growing up.
I mean that's what's come out of this, right? You know, this very much golden age of TV, in my opinion, is that you have all of these shows that are now completely acceptable. There's no stigma to watching a fantasy show.
Yeah.
You know, Game of Thrones kind of made it okay, and I am going to be forever grateful for that.
Yeah.
Did you guys see, it was, I honestly have no sense of time anymore. I don't know if it was last week or like 2 or 3 weeks ago, on Twitter.
Months people ago were by like, the time people hear this.
Yeah, probably.
7 years ago.
So sometime spring 2020, everyone was sharing like a bunch of edits that they'd made on Twitter with like their favorite book series, like as Netflix shows.
Yeah.
And so they had made like, they made edits of like, kind of like what you would see from the Netflix menu.
Okay.
And they were so fun and it was so exciting to just kind of like see which ones people decided to do. And like, I saw some of my favorite like epic fantasies that were represented and I was like, oh, that'd be such a good show. All this kind of stuff.
What are some epic fantasies or just like fantasy novels in general that you would like to see made into a TV show? This is a question for anybody.
That's such a hard question. I would love, so one of my favorite ones that I have read recently is the Devabod trilogy by S.A. Chakraborty. Mm-hmm. It is so good. The third book, so the first two are out. The first one's called City of Brass. Second one's called Kingdom of Copper.
Yeah. I think I have a copy of City of Brass that's been on my TBR for way too long.
It has all of the fantasy politics and a sweet boy.
Sold me.
Yeah, it's so good. The third book called The Empire of Gold is coming out this summer.
Okay.
But it's really fun and it's a kind of, it's so it takes place It's not like a second world fantasy. It's technically takes place in our world, but like kind of, I'm kind of blanking on the time period. It's when the French are in Egypt. That's okay. Like, but there's this girl, her name, one of the main characters, her name is Nari, and she's from Cairo. And she finds out she's part djinn and then has to go to this, yes, like this.
I remember you telling me about this first one.
Yeah. This city called Devabad, which is kind of like in the like Persia, Iran area of the world, and then gets embroiled in a bunch of like court politics, and like it's so good.
Amazing.
So I would love to
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, please, you go.
Oh, I was gonna say, I've got two that have been haunting me, and that's probably gonna be N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth series.
Yes.
And then although they are not finished yet, the Gideon series.
I need to read Gideon. The Ninth is another one that's been plaguing me for a long time.
You need to read it.
Yeah, I've heard really good things, and a couple of our fellow booksellers have read them and really enjoyed them.
I know, that's another one that's sitting on my TBR pile.
They sent us so many arcs. I feel so guilty I didn't read it.
Gideon's actually an extremely fast read, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I have that one. It's sometime in the next, while I'm still home, I'll probably pick it up. But I haven't gotten there yet.
And then you're going to be mad at yourself that you didn't read it earlier.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, you know what? I should have read this over a year ago.
Yeah, because...
What was your other one? Oh, that was your second one. Sorry.
Two series, you know?
Yeah.
Those two series. Because Hero of the Ninth, I mean, yeah, you've got to...
Absolutely.
Yep.
I think our bookseller Nick is reading that one right now. And I've been hearing good stuff. Becca, what was yours? What would you want to see?
So it's not like a novel, but it has two books that are out and one on the way this year. I would love to see Katie O'Neill's The Tea Dragon Society series of books turned into like a young adult like animation series. I don't know. Like, I feel like it's definitely fantasy, but as the story continues to grow and the world expands, like, it does, there is something that feels very, like, close to high fantasy about it, and I just think that, like, having her, like, work come to life through animation would just be absolutely breathtaking.
That'd be really fun. It just, you know, I haven't read Tea Dragon Society yet, but you mentioning, like a fantasy kids series, like, adaptation.
That one's so cute. I
just thought about, there's that show Hilda on Netflix that's based on...
I love
on,
Hilda.
It's so good. And those were like, I think we were shelving those in picture books because they're like, they're graphic novels, but they're for such like a young age reader. And
oh, absolutely. Like it's for a YA audience. And
yeah,
it has
it's precious.
Like feelings of high fantasy that I'm obsessed with.
I'm going to break my own rule because it's fantasy, but it's also sci-fi. I've been reading the Howling Dark by Chris Rocchio, which is the sequel to his first one was called Empire of Silence. And it has a lot of like really fascinating fantasy tropes. It's got like a medieval style sword and sorcery thing going on. But it's an Earth Empire that's spread to the stars. And so there's also an element of like space travel and like cybernetics and stuff. And it's the blending of the two genres in that way has been really fascinating.
I feel like I've heard people call that like similar to like a space opera. And I feel like I would agree. And I feel like a space opera that like, I feel like it could be at home in a fantasy genre.
The thing, you know, space opera, usually stuff like Star Wars gets lumped that way. This feels way more medieval than like Star Wars.
But there's a whole grouping of books out there that, that are like that. I mean, I think David Weber has a series that's like that. And
that's true.
There's, I mean, and going way, way back, you know, I can remember reading books as a kid that were very much, you know, sci-fi in origin. And then, now it's medieval.
Even even Foundation is a lot like that. Like Foundation is basically the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And it plays a lot with like the merchant princes and like just the developing sort of expansion of an empire in a space setting. I just find this stuff really fascinating. I don't feel like it's something that I come across very often, or it's not something that like I've dipped my toes into necessarily. Right. Like I would definitely say that Empire of Science is maybe my first foray into like something that's very distinctly both. And I've been enjoying it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my own personal experience is that, that everything has probably been done.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
It's all out there. It's just that people may not have encountered it, or people may have forgotten about it. You know, it's the whole thing when anybody tries to say, oh, so-and-so is the first person to do X. Probably not.
Like, well, I think that's the thing that's been so interesting about being able to sit and like have conversations like this, right? Because, you know, the thing that I always love about even just like author bios, a lot of like times, sometimes author bios will talk about like, oh, well, these are the things that I liked reading. And you have like a sort of lineage of like inspiration that goes back as like different like authors, like pick up the mantle of doing like this thing. And doing their own spin with it and like taking it in their own direction. But like you're always going to be influenced by the stuff that you read or you watched or whatever.
Absolutely.
I find that stuff fascinating. Just seeing like how those things come together. It'll be really interesting in like 10 years to see what fantasy novel comes out and the person's like, hey, I was really inspired by Chorus of Dragons, right? Like I believe it'll happen. I don't want to put like a weight on you, but
you know, I got my very first, I'm naming my child after one of your characters.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Wait, which character?
Kieran.
Oh, okay, good. That's what I was thinking.
That's a good name too.
Kylie,
you said that in a panic. I was worried. Like who were you worried that the name was gonna
be? I don't know. I just was excited. It wasn't so much panic and excitement are kind of merged into one emotion now, you know?
I did have somebody come up to me at a convention once back when we still had those. And I was talking about Name of All Things, and I mentioned Janelle, and she's like, oh, my name's Janelle. Of course, I don't spell it the normal way. I spell it Janel.
Amazing.
I was like, yeah, hey. So do I. She bought the book.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
That's
there great. You go.
So.
That's so fun.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't even know what to say. Like, you're going to name a child. What?
Yeah.
It seems extremely flattering and also extremely stressful at the same time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Very stressful. Like,
I'm just thinking about this child picking up these books and like, whenever they're old enough to be reading these books and being like, oh,
This Kieran
kid's pretty cool, and then like, you know, everything that happens to Kieran happens to Kieran.
Oh my gosh, Kieran.
Poor real life Kieran.
Yes.
It's quite a legacy. Book Kieran goes through a journey. So
he does.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a sweet boy.
There's still I remember when the first one came out. I think the marketing was like, oh, it's going to be 5 books. But like, is that like a for sure thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a for
sure
thing.
So like, there's still like a long way for Kieran to go. We don't really know like how this, I would like to think that everything's going to be okay in the end, but things have been bleak.
It's, things have to kind of get bad before they get better. That's
fair, I guess. Book 3 really like put me through it though.
Book 3, I'm the arcs just really started going out. I know you guys got kind of an early glimpse, but they just started going out. So I'm figuring in the next couple of weeks, if people, depending on how people are reading, is I really should start to get people coming back and shouting at me. So
yeah, I got
spoilering anything. I'm expecting a lot of people.
Yeah, it's gonna be exciting. I started reading book 3 again because I saw that the arcs were going out. I was like, I can't help myself. I need to do this.
I think before I can read book 3 again, I need to read 1 and 2 again.
Kylie, I, you know, we probably should, because we need to start working on our next conspiracy board.
We do. That's really important. It's an important part of the process.
It really is. I told Jen earlier I was going to buy corkboard and string.
Oh, good.
I gave some pointers. We're upgrading. On that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I have a picture that is covered in sticky notes that I'm afraid to look at for fear of spoilers.
Yeah, don't look at it. Oh, look man. At it when it's small. Don't look at it blown up.
Yeah,
you'll see stuff you don't want to see. But,
wait till later.
You know, the thing I learned from school teachers, this is where I learned this, is that if you go to a hardware store, like Lowe's or, you know, Home Depot probably has something equivalent, but Lowe's in this particular case, you can get this acoustic wall paneling. It's meant to, you know, it's meant to be put in place of drywall.
Yeah.
But it's black and it's like an 8-foot by 4-foot panel that is really, really good as the equivalent of a cork pin board, and it's $10.
That's great.
Wow, this is good information.
Right,
Jen, you're just going to come to the store next, and we're going to have a whole wall in the back room just dedicated.
I was literally about to say, Kylie, like, I think I have enough space above where my computer is.
You do.
Put it there.
I guess that's our next project.
Yeah, I put one up in my office, and that and the hardware to put it up on the wall was grand total of $15.
Worth it.
Good. Oh, what did we? Oh, we did decide we're gonna put, you know, the McDonald's chart. The like,
oh my, yes.
Which character drives through McDonald's, buys coffee, and leaves? And we're gonna do one of those triangles for all the characters.
Wait, wasn't there another one? Did we do this? Oh, know. We already did the cinnamon roll one. That was on the first board.
That was on the first one.
You're right.
Anyway,
we do need to share pictures of this board for people.
You know, my husband does in fact call book three. A Cinnabon franchise opportunity.
Oh my gosh.
That's excellent. Oh,
I love it. You know,
I just miss all those kids so much.
Reading book three and suddenly getting like more than just the two perspectives that we've really like sat in for the other, just having a bunch of other character stories like filling in as well made me so happy. Every time I got to a new character that I wasn't expecting to read, I was like, oh my god, Kylie, this person's in it.
Yep. There was a couple chapters I was just like, oh my goodness, we're doing this now, are we? And then then I would yell about it for a while at Gary.
We yelled a lot.
I had a lot of fun writing book three, so I'm really looking forward to sharing it with people.
Yeah. I want to give you some time to talk about like what the like writing the series has been like, and like I know that, you know, book three is coming out in August and you're working on book four, but like what's this process been like? Like I imagine like you're definitely clearly you're a plotter, because I think juggling something like this you sort of have to be, right? Like outlining and having all of your ducks in a row, because there's like a lot of moving pieces and a lot of very complicated backstories for these characters.
Yeah. And in fact, part of the problem that I've had with book four has been because book four has probably been the least suitable so far to that kind of process, because it is so strongly character study compared to some of the others.
Sure.
So I think I can definitely say this is not... I am not comfortable doing it purely on, you know, a spontaneous process. But but I've gotten past that, so we're good.
Awesome.
For the most part, though, I'm definitely a person that likes to plan it out in advance. I don't want to say, though, like I'm a pure outliner, because I very much leave myself a lot of wiggle room to discover as I go, and I enjoy that part of the writing process. I probably fall in the middle between those extremes.
Is there any? Or I was sorry.
Go ahead, Kylie.
I was just going to ask: is there anything from book one or two that like changed drastically while you were writing, or did the main arcs kind of stay
Oh, Tyenso.
Yeah.
Tyenso changed. Tyenso, I feel comfortable telling people this and not it not being a drastic spoiler or anything. Tyenso really never made it off of the ship.
Really?
In the first planning sessions for
Queens.
She was a very much background character who was not going to have any kind of a big part in the story. And that changed.
Just a little. Yes.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit.
You know, and I've had other characters similarly kind of just go, nope, I would like to have a bigger part now. You know, I joke that, but I don't joke, but I'm serious that, I've tried to kill Talon in every book.
That's amazing.
I have planned to kill Talon in every book. Okay, this is where I'm going to kill Talon. And she is very good at coming
She's very crafty.
Reasons, very good at coming up with reasons why she would survive.
I have come to love Talon so much over the three books so far. Like, her story is so complicated and just fascinating. And every time she shows up, I'm like, oh no, she's back. And then I have reasons to be like, she's so bad. Is she really so bad?
Yes.
Yes.
She's pretty bad. She's pretty bad.
So, like, she's on her own side, it feels like, very much. And I think I admire that about her. Despite the chaos that she causes.
The problem with Talon is not that she is on her own side. The problem is that she is on too many sides.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. Absolutely makes sense considering who her character is.
Right. Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of history there.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, so it switches. She, you know, she'll be on one person's side and then it'll be like, nope, I'm now on this person's side. And
yeah.
And she's just such a little chaos gremlin.
It's Chaos Gremlin is a good way to describe her.
Yes, that's probably the perfect way.
So speaking of chaos, this actually reminded me, over the weekend, one of our store co-owners, Matt, sent me a tweet of yours, Jen, talking about necromancy. And you said in it that you could talk at lengths about it. And I think that a episode about epic fantasy is like, seriously lacking if we don't talk a little bit about Dungeons and Dragons, because I feel like there's a lot of room for creation of like smaller scale epic fantasy in that gameplay.
Right. So what? But
I think
what tweet was this?
I'm looking for it. I think it was we were talking about magic systems, and I think Matt tweeted about what are some of your favorite magic systems in other books?
Okay.
And I think necromancy came up in that discussion.
You brought up K.A. Dorr's necromancy and water-based magic systems from
Chronicles of Gadeed.
Yes.
I might be pronouncing that incorrectly.
I was going to pronounce
apologize,
it much
Kay,
more
if
so.
That is the case.
But when we were talking about like different types of magic, we were discussing what our favorite kinds were, our different favorite magic systems. And I made the mistake of going first, and I said necromancy was my favorite, and it got passionate.
I don't think that was a mistake.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on how you really. You have not read the Gideon books.
No, not yet.
Okay.
I know.
Because I gotta say that Tamsin Muir's probably done the most complete breakdown of necromancy in all its permutations that I have seen anywhere. So that's, just put that out there.
Okay. This book is moving higher and higher up my TBR pile as we speak.
So, I do love magic systems, and I, you know, I grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons, and you kind of can't be a tabletop RPG kid without having that kind of a background, I don't think. I mean, maybe you could, but I certainly didn't.
I feel like it's certainly a lot harder for people that don't have that sort of a passion backing it up.
Right. Sure. I didn't, you know, I hadn't played any tabletop stuff until recently. Actually, I'm playing my first D&D campaign that started the end of the year last year, I think. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a part of, if you're going to do like a tabletop RPG campaign that has a magic character, they have to have pretty rigid rules about how that magic system works.
Oh, but right. It is so fun to mess with those rules and break them.
Yeah.
And it's fun to obfuscate as well. Okay. I mean, when you're writing about it, you do not necessarily, depending on the approach that you're taking to it, you do not necessarily want those rules to be obvious on the page. You don't necessarily want the reader to have a... to be able to go, okay, you can use this twice a day, and it goes out to 120 feet, and you need these spell components. And I mean, you know, that is an approach, and it's a valid one. Certainly, there's a whole, you know, the whole lit RPG genre, is very much about putting those sorts of stats right on the page. But if you don't want that to be the focus of your book, maybe you may not want to be so transparent about that information.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. Like, I feel like I can be the most sort of particular about it, because like I think if you're going to take the time in your book to define this is how my magic system works, and then you don't follow it up, like it's frustrating. It's like, no, you said that this is how it works, but that's not true.
I did not know that this would get Gary back on this.
No, I'm not gonna dig too deep into it, but it absolutely is something that, like, you know, frustrated me a lot reading different fantasy books growing up.
Well, I mean, I think that there is a danger, depending on how you're approaching that, of if you are making it up as you go along.
Yeah.
That you may end up with some rules that contradict what you've previously written. You may run into continuity problems, and that's happened. Sometimes that has happened on really, really famous fantasy series.
We got into it.
Yeah,
we got into it. What Gary means is he yelled at us all for like 15 minutes.
I'm
the bad guy because I want to resurrect the dead.
I don't have.
I feel like once you explained your reasoning, Becca, that at least I understood where you were coming from.
It's just, it's one of those things for me, like, I will never get off of my high horse about necromancy, because people, like, hear it, and they're, like, raising the dead. It has to be bad. It's only for bad characters. But, like I posed to them in the other episode, I was like, you know, if Gary's character's, like, loved one dies, I like that I can have the power to be like, do you want to be able to, like, say that final goodbye? Like, do you want me to help you, like, commune with the dead? And, like, I think it's a very useful power that's constantly misunderstood.
Yeah, that's no. I've been, me and like, every writer I know right now has been binge-watching The Untamed, which is this...
I need to watch that.
Chinese fantasy drama on Netflix right now. Oh. And the main character's a necromancer.
I did not know that.
And no, absolutely. And a huge section of the sort of background world building of this is that, you know, there are different flavors, if you will, of necromancy. You know, there's the bad kind of demonic necromancy, and then there's the good necromancy. But there's an awful lot of it that is dealing with putting souls to rest and having... communing with the dead to, you know, say goodbye to your loved ones, and you know, making sure that people are at peace when they pass on, and that sort of thing.
Sure.
So
that's been on my Netflix queue for so long.
I did not know it existed. I need to finally watch it. I'm excited. Kylie, let's watch it together.
Okay. Because I listen to the Be the Serpent podcast, and they talk about it all the time. And so,
yes. I'm sure.
I need to watch it.
Yeah, it is a wild ride, I will say that.
I've gathered. I'm ready, though.
I'm going to add that to my queue, then. Okay.
Yeah.
Should have necromancy for the next week is what I'm going to be doing.
I could talk about it for, like, 40 more minutes. Like, it's such a good facet of magic.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, and, like, part of the reason that that I made some of the choices that I made in my fantasy series was, you know, because I was really fascinated with the Dungeons and Dragons relationship with character death.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that actually.
Because there's so much about D&D, and I love D&D, I really do, but there's so much about D&D that doesn't think about consequences. That doesn't think through the ramifications of you can raise people from the dead. Okay, well, so who gets raised from the dead? What this, you know, if it takes money, then it becomes a class issue. Who gets raised from the dead? You know, if it's not a money issue, then who do the gods say is okay or not okay to raise from the dead? I mean, there's just so much that, you know, what do these sorts of things do to an economy? How does an economy function when you have reliable magic?
That's fascinating, especially like thinking about some of the stuff that goes down in your books.
It's very much me answering these questions. You know, I laughed when Robert Jackson Bennett's Foundry Side came out, because it was pretty obvious we were thinking along similar lines you know, this idea of somebody's going to commodify this. That's how it's going to work.
It's an interesting way to reflect just like the way things tend to work in our day to day, right? Like someone has a skill, a talent, whatever, like how do you use it for profit, or who benefits from it?
Right.
And
like someone will try to commodify it. Yeah. Somebody will try to monopolize it.
Everything's political.
Like, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that it's been really interesting. You know, there are so many really fascinating bits of, like, not only, like, character study, but just, like, the ways the world functions and like, little political things in your books that I had never really thought about in fantasy before, much like, the different houses with their, the magic that they rule over or responsible for or profit off of, right? Like, I find it so interesting that you take the time to like dig into those things.
See, I think that's such an intelligent idea though. Like, I feel like a lot of epic fantasy, you know, it doesn't necessarily like touch onto subjects that we deal with like in the real world in the way that you're doing again. I think it's really significant to discuss things like monopolization and profit and classism and other like governmental and political structures within magic, because let's face it, like if magic was real right now today, oh my god, there'd be commercials all the time, like 1-800 necromancy.
yeah absolutely, you know, and there would be regulations over who could do it and under what circumstances, and
yeah
absolutely. You know, there would be spell patents, and there would be, you know,
oh my god,
because people are people. And so I thought that those were really interesting questions, and it's not that I've never seen them addressed in fantasy, I just never saw them addressed in fantasy the way I personally wanted to address them, which is probably the reason a lot of us embark on writing huge epic fantasy books. Is whatever that reason is, whatever that, you know, thing that you want to see out there that isn't out there.
It's one thing to like write a world that has magic in it. It's a whole other ballgame to like create a world to like explore a lot of the this nitty gritty. I really admire a lot of the stuff that you've done in your books.
Well, I mean, there's a thing that I always grew up being really interested in, and that was there is a paradox in fantasy, right?
Okay.
And the paradox in fantasy is that you are going to have a chosen one who is going to defeat the bad guy and save the kingdom.
Yeah.
And you have, very often in a lot of these stories, kingdoms that if you look at them kind of closely, maybe don't deserve saving.
Mm-hmm.
So who's a good guy here?
Yeah, no,
absolutely, 100% agree with that.
I remember getting the arc for Ruin of Kings, and I think the back of the arc, and it might even be on the back of the actual book, but talking about the prophecy that he's going to destroy the empire. And then you like get into what this world is, and you see the empire for what it is. And there's part of me now that's very much like, destroy the empire.
Yeah, like, who cares? Burn it down.
It's terrible. And
but the empire provides roads and reliable food, yeah, and medical services.
It's complicated.
It's not complicated. Burn
no,
it down.
Burn it down.
But I mean, it, quite honestly, though, like, if you do that, there's never been a revolution, a serious, large-scale revolution, where a lot of innocent people don't die.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who's the good guy?
Yeah. It's a very complicated position to be in, because it's like, hey, I can see that the system that I'm a part of is a terrible system, but if I break it, things are going to be even worse for a while.
Right.
See,
that's and it may not recover.
That's always been my personal pull to fantasy. Like, I don't know if it's just because at heart, like, I'm like an anarchist little like ass that just wants to destroy the system, but like, I've always loved and been drawn to characters that are sort of like, I don't want to say the anti-hero, but like, they're the character who's like, I'm gonna do what is actually the morally correct thing, whether
Becca, you have to read these books.
Yeah, you really do.
The first one is on its way to my house. I'm really glad that it didn't get here beforehand.
Claim another victim.
I giggle. Honestly, I giggle every single time somebody tells me how much they love Senare.
Oh,
wow.
Because I'm just like, she's a terrorist.
Yeah.
She's a terrorist.
She is.
Well, but there you go. A perfect example, like, this isn't fantasy necessarily, but like, one of my favorite characters of all time is Poison Ivy, who's literally an eco-terrorist.
Yes.
You know what? When the world starts to collapse from global warming, she's gonna have solutions that Batman is not.
You know, it's so funny, because when I was a kid, like, she was unequivocally a bad guy. There was no question she was a bad guy, and I have watched over the past 30-something years as that has completely flipped. because we're sitting here going, you know,
she's right.
Like, do I think that she should be killing people? Maybe. Who am I to say what's right or wrong? As I started to justify her being a villain, I was like, well, you know.
Yeah.
Oil tycoon? I don't know.
Sounds like the real bad guy here is that dude.
Yeah.
So this is not related to anything we're talking about.
Sure.
Well, I did want to do a segue. I'm going to do a really sharp left turn.
Okay.
Do it. Go.
I wanted to bring this up earlier, but I just didn't find the right moment. When we were talking about, Jen, like, you growing up and, like, epic fantasy and big fantasy stuff not being, like, super mainstream and popular, I wrote a lot of, like, information down about music that has been influenced by epic fantasy.
I saw your notes.
I was just sort of wondering, like, you know, did any of you guys have any experience with that? Like, when I was growing up, my dad was like a former Marine and a biker, so he listened to a lot of like Led Zeppelin and Metallica and Black Sabbath, and all of them have music that's like literally about epic fantasies, like Lord of the Rings.
You've missed a couple of my favorite folk bands. I say jokingly, knowing that people who are really into Filk are going to get mad at me for saying that. But you know, you can't leave Blue Oyster Cult. And Rush started to do a little bit more sci-fi than fantasy. But you know,
said Rush.
I said Rush.
Uh huh.
They did Rivendell.
Yeah. They named did after. Well, did they do? Probably. I'm not as into Rush as I am into Blue Oyster Cult.
They also did a song called The Necromancer, and it was about Gandalf's name for Sauron in The Hobbit.
Right.
Yes, I remember that one. But yeah, you know, totally. Blue Oyster Cult has a bunch of stuff that's you know, very much like I mean, they have an Elric, you know, Michael Moorcock song. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of stuff out there that
it's just like, it's always so amusing to me, and like especially in like B-rated like horror movies, especially this seems to happen where like metalheads and like guys that are really into like hardcore music bully like D&D nerds, because I mean, the music that metalheads are listening to half the time is based off of the stuff that the D&D nerd likes.
Right.
Like, we're all on the fringe. Yeah. We all like the same things, just in different faces.
Yeah. I mean,
it is really interesting when, I was just going to say, it's interesting when you think about it, like the origins of like epic fantasy are like, you would assume like going back to like epic poems. So you've got like Gilgamesh or like the Iliad, the Odyssey, the Ramayana, that kind of thing. But those like, or like oral traditions, probably sung in some sort of way. So it's just kind of like epic fantasy and like writing music and songs have always kind of like been hand in hand, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, what is that?
Look. Yeah, totally. I would completely agree with that. And I think that, I mean, at least my own personal experience, obviously anecdotal, you know, the cliche D&D nerd that I always see depicted in media, I, for the most part, never knew. I mean,
I don't know if that exact archetype really exists.
No, I don't think it does. It does. Scale. No, it does. I rarely knew. I actually did know a couple people that unfortunately did pretty perfectly fit into into that cliche, just proving that, you know, cliches sometimes get started for a good reason, but mostly no, you know, mostly not anything like that. You know, and I think that the revitalization and the renaissance that we're having right now, thank you, Matt Mercer.
yes, thank you.
for an awful lot of this has been because, you know, we have this opportunity in this age to drop in on games and see that they are not what kind of Hollywood was cliche making them out to be.
Yeah. There's actually, between things like Critical Role and Adventure Zone and Friend of the Table, which is one of my personal favorites right now, is like people that are running actual play tabletop RPG stuff and showing exactly that it's not the like very stereotypical thing that we've come to see in movies and TV shows. I shout it out all the time, but Friends of the Table is like one of my favorites because it's a group of queer folks playing a group of queer characters in this really queer setting. And it's like fascinating. It's not anything like the epic fantasy that I've read or watched previous to a lot of stuff that I've now discovered in the last couple of years. Like, I think that even the stuff that you're getting in publishing is way more interesting and way more representational than I think people expect it to be.
That's the thing that I love about like modern, like how popular like D&D podcasts have gotten. Like, I really like this kind of smaller, I guess it's not that small. It has 16,600 followers now on Twitter, but, Dungeons and Daddies. It's put together by, Matt Arnold, Anthony Birch, Will Campos, Freddie Wong. And it's about like four dads that get sucked into the world of Dungeons and Dragons, like in their minivan after, like, their kids,
amazing,
like, get stolen, like, into this magical world. And, like, so it's just this, like, huge adventure of, like, them as, like, 21st century, like, granola dad, stoner dad, or, like, great, stereotypical masculine dad, like, trying to, like, fight goblins and save their kids. And
sure.
Yeah, I love, yeah, that. You know, I yeah, exactly. And I love it because you get to look at these things and it's like, instead of it being hearsay, and if you happen to be lucky enough to drop in on a local game store where there's a game going and maybe, yeah, you run across a good DM, you can, you know, watch some of these things and think, oh, that looks like fun. I mean, I know the complaints that that expectations have been warped.
Yeah.
Because not everyone is a professional voice actor.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I've had a couple of games where they started after those things became very popular recently and people are like, this isn't super, yeah, high stakes. And I'm like, no, yeah, we're just having pizza.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
Well, this would also be a really great time to shout out that Mysterious Galaxy does have a D&D group that meets, and I'll include all the information and links in the description of the episode for people that are listening.
That would be...
That's been going on for, like, over a year now, I think.
Yeah.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, I think it was last April. I think it was in, like, 2019, wow, that it started. So they've been doing that for a really long time.
Again, and time has lost all meaning to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
All meaning. Just all meaning.
Just gone. Just
everything's, it's like in the what good place. Everything is Jeremy Baramee.
Jeremy Baramee. The dot in the eye. That's the thing.
Oh gosh.
Yep. It's the dot above the eye.
We're stuck in the dot in the eye.
We're stuck in the dot
right
above the eye.
I can't.
Yeah. What is it? 30 days in February, 500 days. I mean, just keeps going longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
There's a really great image that's been going around over the last week of a calendar that just, like, disintegrates and floats away in the wind by April. And, like, that's what I feel like right now. It's just been rough. Okay, as we're wrapping up here, I think this feels like it's coming to an end. We'd like to ask everybody what they're reading. What stuff are you reading right now, Jen?
Well, I am... see, this is the part where I apologize for my own TBR pile.
Yeah.
It has taken me this long to get around to reading Tasha Suri's Empire of Sand.
I love that book so much.
And I love Tasha Suri. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, Tasha. I'm so sorry. but I'm loving the book. I knew I would.
So good.
And then I'm also reading, oh gosh, I'm reading, I have a couple of books in the background, which is K. Doors, The Unconquered City. These are all, I think, ARCs. So
that's fair.
Keep that in mind. K.M. Sparza's First Become Ashes, and Kate Elliott's The Unconquerable Sun. Oh. I am terribly, terribly excited about all of those. So, you know, yeah.
That's awesome. Kylie, what are you reading?
Well, like I was telling you before we started, I have picked up probably about 5 or 6 books since staying at home began, and I finished one. But I am, because nothing is, I'm having a hard time focusing, but I am slowly making my way through a reread of The Goblin Emperor, because that is just a favorite of mine, and it is so soft and good and warm. Very comforting book. But I also got on a like Slavic folklore kick after rereading Deathless, so I started Uprooted by Naomi Novik, which I haven't read yet.
That's really good.
So I am only like one chapter into it, but I'm liking it so far. And then other than that, I'm just like reading random thing, like short stories and stuff online here and there.
That's fun. That's valid. That's still allowed.
Kylie, have you read Alexander Rowland's A Conspiracy of Truths?
I haven't. It's on my shelf. I need to so badly.
If you would like something that is you know, if you liked Goblin Emperor, I think that is a good match. So
I know I'm going to love them. I have both of them. I have that one in Choir of Lies. They're sitting there waiting for me. I know I'm going to love them. I know
fair,
it in my heart.
Enough. Just want to shout that one out.
Yeah, that's, I mean, maybe that's the push I needed.
I'll yeah, you need, it's them, another yeah. warm blanket.
Yep, very much so.
Sometimes I like just taking that book off the shelf and just like feeling the cover, because Saga Press did something just really amazing with the dust jacket that makes it feel like a leather book, but it's
oh,
not.
It's, yes. it's so good. It's so good.
It's so cool. Anyway.
It's the oh, prettiest incredible. Cover.
Becca, what are you reading?
So I am obviously waiting for my order of books to arrive so I can start those. But for right now, I'm always keeping up with Lore Olympus on Webtoons by Rachel Smythe. Oh, yeah. And I am reading the arc for Star Wars Poe Dameron, the Freefall YA book by Alex Segura. And yeah.
I am very ready to start that one. I have it on my e-reader, but I have not started it yet.
It's such it's not like super daunting, even though like it is Star Wars, so you know there's a lot of like names and places that have complicated names, and
the problem that I'm having right now is like I feel like I'm going to talk about the same books that I talked about in week one. Like I'm about to start Queen's Peril again now that I've freed up the other books I was reading, and like actually commit to that. I want to read this one. I need to finish up Howling Dark. I've been listening to the audiobook, but it's so long. Like, I love it, but it's so long, and it's taking me so long to get through it because, like, I don't have a commute anymore, so a lot of my listening time has been cut down severely.
Oh, same. I have so many, like, backed up podcasts because of that.
Yeah, 100%, right? Like, when I was doing inventory stuff at the bookstore, it was really easy for me to get through audiobooks, but, like, it's not the same when I'm at home doing podcast stuff, you know? I have to listen to this when I edit. I can't listen to an audiobook at the same time. So I'm going to finish that, and then I think I'm going to start Gideon the Ninth. I should commit to it and just say that it's happening so that I actually have to do it by the time this episode airs.
This podcast is just Jen convincing us to read books that are already on our TBR piles.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I'm pleased with that. I'm good with that.
Oh, thank you so much for being here, Jen. This was a blast.
It was definitely a lot of fun. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can, of course, find all of our stuff. All of the books that we shouted out will be included in the description, but you can also find them on our website at mistgalaxy.com. You can find us at Mist Galaxy Books on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I also want to say thank you to the wonderful Austin Farmer, who does our intro and outro music. It's a track called Kill the Farm Boy off of Bookshelf Symphony Orchestra, of course, inspired by the novel of the same name. It's great. Go read that also. Maybe I should link that in this episode because I haven't done that yet. And come back next week for, I think we have another interview next week, actually. So that should be fun. Join us next time in a galaxy not so far away.
You did
Bye, everyone.
It wrong.
I did it wrong? Well, I tried. I tried. Do you want to give us our outro? Go ahead, Becca. Outro us.
Okay. We'll see you again soon in a galaxy not so far away.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.